announcement of financial results. My name is Inna, and I'll be your coordinator for today's conference. For the duration of the call, you'll be on listen only, and at the end of the call, you'll have the opportunity to ask questions. If at any time you need assistance, please press star zero on your telephone keypad, and you'll be connected to an operator. I'm now handing you over to Vladislav Zelenka to begin. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, and good day, everyone. I would like to welcome you to Mitchell's conference call to discuss our first quarter 2012 financial results, which were reported today. With us from management today are Mr. Evgeny Mihil, Mitchell's CEO, Mr. Stanislav Ploshenko, Mitchell's CFO, and Mr. Oleg Koržov, Mitchell's Senior Vice President for Economics and Management. After management has made their formal remarks, we will take your questions to the presentation team. Please note that during this call, management will make forward-looking statements, some of which may have been made in the press release. Some of the information on this conference call may contain projections or other forward-looking statements regarding future events or the future financial performance of Mitchell, as defined in the Safe Harbor provisions of the U.S. Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. We wish to caution you that these statements are only predictions and that actual events or results may differ materially. We do not intend to update these statements. We refer you to the documents Mitchell filed from time to time with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission, which contain and identify important factors that could cause the actual results to differ materially from those contained in our projections or forward-looking statements. In addition, we will be using non-GAAP financial measures, including EBITDA, in our discussion today. Reconciliations of non-GAAP financial measures to the most directly comparable US GAAP financial measures are contained in the earnings press release, which is available on our website at Mitchell.com. At this point, I would like to turn the call over to Mitchell's CEO. Mr. Mihil, please go ahead.
Добрый день и доброе утро, дамы и господа. Мы рады вас приветствовать на конференц-звонке по результатам деятельности компании за первый квартал 2012 года.
Good morning and good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to a conference call where we will discuss company's performance in the first quarter of 2012.
Необходимо признать, что в целом первый квартал этого года оказался достаточно непростым. Затянувшаяся слабость мировой экономики и низкий спрос со стороны основных потребителей обусловили значительное снижение квартальных цен на коксующийся уголь, что привело к более низкому финансовому результату горнодобывающего дивизиона Мичела. С другой стороны, падение цен на сырье для металлургического производства на фоне относительно стабильных цен на металлопродукцию в первом квартале способствовало улучшению финансовых показателей металлургического дивизиона компании. Свой вклад оказали и наши успешные действия, направленные на оптимизацию производственно-сбытовой программы с целью сокращения накопленных к концу прошлого года складских запасов сервисно-сбытового подразделения компании Mitchell Service Global и соответствующего высвобождения оборотного капитала для улучшения операционного денежного потока группы.
We have to recognize the fact that on the whole, the first quarter of this year proved to be rather challenging. Significant reduction of quarterly prices on coking coal was predetermined by a prolonged weakness of the global economy and low demand from major customers. This worked against Mitchell Mining financial performance. On the other side, in the first quarter, steel feedstock prices were falling at a time when steel product prices were relatively stable. This contributed to high financial results of Mitchell Steel. We succeeded in our efforts at optimizing the production and sale program with a view to reduce the inventory, which accumulated at the end of last year in Mitchell Service Global, and this also had a positive effect. We managed to release working capital to improve operational cash flow of the group.
В целом, по итогам первого квартала 2012 года получены следующие результаты. Консолидированная выручка ООО Mitchell составила около 3 миллиардов долларов США. Показатели EBITDA 463 миллиона долларов США, а чистая прибыль 218 миллионов долларов США.
Overall, we achieved the following results in the first quarter of 2012. Mitchell's consolidated revenue was around $3 billion, EBITDA was $463 million, net income $218 million.
Рассматривая проделанную нами работу с точки зрения ключевых стратегических направлений развития бизнеса, в первую очередь горнодобывающего дивизиона, хотел бы отметить, что завершив к концу прошлого года укладку железнодорожного полотна от БАМа до Льгинского месторождения, с начала этого года мы приступили к строительству сезонной обогатительной фабрики, следующего важного инфраструктурного объекта в рамках освоения Эльги. Мы ожидаем завершить ее строительство к концу июля, что позволит уже в этом году отгружать готовый концентрат коксующегося угля прямо с месторождения, повышая эффективность проекта.
Concerning our activities in the key areas of strategic business development, especially mining, I have to note that at the end of last year, a railroad linking Baikal-Amur mainline and Elga deposit was opened. Early this year, we started construction of the seasonal washing plant, another infrastructure facility that is essential for Elga development. We expect to complete construction by the end of July, which will enable shipments of ready-made coking coal concentrate directly from the deposit already in this year, thus enhancing the project's efficiency.
Не стоит забывать, что в ближайшие годы горнодобывающий дивизион Мечела будет развиваться не только за счет наращивания добычи на Эльгинском месторождении, но также путем освоения существующей ресурсной базы Южного Кузбасса, запас угля которого по стандартам JORC составляет порядка 700 миллионов тонн. На Южном Кузбассе с начала года нам удалось продвинуться в реализации одного из наиболее значимых текущих проектов – строительстве второй очереди шахты Сибергинская. К маю мы закончили продолжавшиеся несколько лет работы по проходке вертикального ствола и в настоящее время приступили к его армированию. Запуск второй очереди шахты Сибергинская мы ожидаем в 2014 году, что позволит удвоить добычу угля на данной шахте до 2,4 миллионов тонн в год.
We mustn't forget that in the coming years, Mitchell's mining segment will develop not only by building up production at Elga. JORC reserves of the southern Kuzbass are estimated to be around 700 million tons. From the start of the year, in the southern Kuzbass, we made progress with one of our most important current projects, construction of the second line at Sibirginskaya mine. By May, we completed tunneling of the vertical shafts that took us several years, and at this moment we begin to reinforce it. We expect to launch the second line at Sibirginskaya mine in 2014, thus doubling its production and bringing it to 2.4 million tons of coal a year.
С учетом существенного прироста объемов добычи угля в ближайшие годы, важное внимание мы уделяем развитию собственных портовых мощностей для обеспечения эффективного доступа на наиболее перспективные рынки. С начала года в значительной степени нам удалось продвинуться в реализации проекта по расширению мощностей порта Пасит, который служит нашими воротами в Азиатско-Тихоокеанский регион. Уже к концу года мы планируем увеличить мощность порта с текущих 4 миллионов тонн до 7 миллионов тонн в год. С завершением дноуглубительных работ в акватории порта в следующем году мощность порта будет доведена до 9 миллионов тонн. При этом мы сможем принимать суда класса «Панамакс» водоизмещением до 60 тысяч тонн, что значительно повысит эффективность транспортных перевозок через данный порт.
Considering a serious uplift in production of coal in the coming years, we focus on development of own port facilities to ensure efficient access to the most promising markets. From the start of the year, we managed to make progress in expanding the capacity of Port Posiet, our gaze to the Asian Pacific region. Till the end of the year, we plan to increase port's capacity from current 4 million tons to 7 million tons a year. When dredging in the harbor is done next year, the port's capacity will reach 9 million tons. And the port will be able to receive Panamax-class vessels with deadweight of up to 60,000 tons, which will significantly improve the efficiency of logistics through the port.
Успеха в первом квартале мы добились и с точки зрения упрочнения наших позиций в строительном металлургическом ассортименте. Несмотря на сезонно низкий рынок строительной металлопродукции, в первом квартале Mitchell Service Global за счет прямого доступа к более чем 28 тысяч конечных потребителей в России и Европе удалось нарастить продажи и существенно сократить складские запасы, которые на конец года составляли 1,325 миллионов тонн металлургической продукции. Так, только за период январь-март склады Mitchell Service Global сократились более чем на 200 тысяч тонн. Эта тенденция сохранилась и в период с апреля по май, когда складские запасы Mitchell Service Global были сокращены еще на 107 тысяч тонн, до чуть более 1 миллиона тонн по состоянию на начало июня. Как уже было сказано выше, это способствовало высвобождению оборотного капитала и соответствующему улучшению операционного денежного потока группы.
In the first quarter, the company also succeeded in strengthening its position in the construction steel products. Despite the low seasonal market, Mitchell Service Global, through its direct access to more than 28,000 end customers in Russia and Europe, managed to raise sales and substantially reduce inventory, which at the end of the year were 1,325,000 tons of steel products. Between January and March, Mitchell Service Global stock lost more than 200,000 tons. This trend continued in April and May, when Mitchell Service Global scaled down its inventory by another 107,000 tons, bringing it to just over 1 million tons as of June. As I have already mentioned, this had a positive impact on the working capital and group's operational cash flow.
В соответствии с обновленной стратегией, утвержденной на Совете директоров компании 10 мая, параллельно с развитием вышеназванных приоритетных направлений, мы продолжаем работу по анализу всех наших активов на их соответствие основополагающим критериям стратегии с целью определения наиболее оптимальных путей для совершенствования существующей структуры активов в рамках реализации задачи по улучшению операционного денежного потока предприятий группы Мечела. Выработка предложений в этом направлении займет определенное время, и сейчас говорить о каких-либо конкретных результатах преждевременно. Итоги такой работы в соответствующем порядке будут представлены на рассмотрение Совета директоров. Уверен, что значительный потенциал дальнейшего развития Мечела кроется именно в ключевых стратегических проектах, которым, наряду с задачами по улучшению операционного денежного потока и снижению долговой нагрузки, будет отдаваться безусловный приоритет. Именно такая стратегия будет самым лучшим образом способствовать увеличению акционерной стоимости компании. А теперь я передаю слово Станиславу Площенко, который более подробно расскажет о финансовых результатах по всем сегментам нашего бизнеса. Спасибо.
In accordance with the updated strategy approved by the Board of Directors on the 10th of May, in parallel to the development of the above-mentioned priority areas, we continue the process of reviewing all our assets in terms of their alignment with the fundamental parameters of the strategy. This is done with a view to determine the most optimal ways to refine the current asset structure towards improvement of operational cash flow of the group's enterprises. It will take some time to work out specific proposals, and it would be too early now to talk about any results. All findings will be presented to the Board of Directors for their consideration. I am confident that further potential for Mitchell's development is contained in key strategic projects. These will be prioritized along with measures for improvement of operational cash flow and debt reduction. Such strategy will have the most positive impact on the growth of shareholder value. And now I pass the floor to Stanislav Poshenko, who will cover the details of the financial results for all segments of our business. Thank you.
Good morning and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Only slightly more than a month ago, we reported the full year results of 2011, where we stated the measures the company was taking in order to adjust its operations to the volatile market environment and improve its cash flow. Now, reporting the first quarter of 2012, we are proud to deliver the first results of these measures. We'll traditionally start our discussion with the mining segment. The overall negative price dynamics on the key products could not leave its revenue and profitability unaffected, with coking concentrate FCA price down 22% quarter-on-quarter, anthracite and PCI down 9%, and iron ore concentrate down 19%. Only steam coal realized price beat the trend with 20% quarterly rise, which was largely attributable to increased export sales. Volume-wise, coking coal sales to third parties held fairly steady, down by less than 2%, despite the fact that production decreased in the first quarter due to temporary halt of Sibirginskaya mine in southern Kuzbass and idling of certain mines at Bluestone. That was compensated by a rundown on stock, which also helped to release cash. PCI and anthracite volumes were down by about 20%. Thermal coal sales down by 18% tonnage-wise, as internal consumption of steam coal more than doubled, driven by high season for power generation. Additionally, we experienced increased demand in Turkey and Kazakhstan due to an unusually cold winter. These negative variances were somewhat offset by a 30% increase in iron ore sales as internal consumption decreased, releasing more volumes for export sales. That actually is reflected in a 14 quarter-on-quarter reduction in inter-segment sales to $226 million. It is notable, though, that in comparison to the first quarter of 2011, the third-party sales of coking concentrate still showed a hefty 29% growth in physical terms, while PCI and anthracite sales almost doubled, largely at the expense of thermal coal, where sales volumes went down by 60%. However, coming back to the reporting period, our mining segment revenue from sales to third parties fell by 12% quarter-on-quarter to $933 million. The markets for our mining products continue to be quite difficult due to the fallout from the European sovereign debt crisis and the continuing slowdown in Chinese demand. In particular, the turbulence in the Eurozone was the main driver for the fall-off in PCI and anthracite shipments, which resulted in European share of sales contract to 14%, as you can see on the slide number 6. Demand for these types of coal, however, is relatively strong in the Pacific Rim, and we are intensifying our marketing efforts so as to improve the geographic diversification of demand. Additionally, we are beginning to see signs of price support in the market, giving us reasons to be cautiously optimistic with respect to an improved top line during the second half of the year. Given the difficulty of the overall operating environment, we have tried to maintain an even sharper focus on our cash cost. However, depreciating dollar and temporary mine shutdowns at Southern Kuzbass, which pushed the share of fixed costs up, led to a $5 increase in the cash cost of our Kuzbass operations to $40 a ton. This was combined with slightly higher stripping ratio at open pit mines incurred as we ramped up production in them to compensate for lost underground production. At Yakut Uyghur, cash cost increased by 3% to $35 per ton due to front-loading of certain Russian payroll taxes and additional drilling at the Nerengri open pit in order to allow us to optimize the blend going to the washing plant. The dollar depreciation was accountable for $1 of that increase, which was pretty much the case for all our Russian operations. Koshinov mining plant also saw a $3 per ton increase, $2 of which was due to higher maintenance expense. At Bluestone, however, we were able to reduce cash costs by $13 per ton through implementing an intensive expense management exercise and temporarily closing two of our high-cost mines. The above factors led to a 19% decrease in gross profit to $603 million. Sales and distribution expenses increased quarter-on-quarter to $249 million. The increase is explained by growth of sales to China on CIF and CFR basis, as China's share of sales grew from 23% in Q4 to 28% in Q1, as well as annual increase in rail and other transportation-related tariffs. Growth in selling and distribution expenses was partially offset by a $24 million increase in administrative and other operating expenses. Main reason for that decrease was absence of $7 million negative effect on disposal of fixed assets posted in the fourth quarter, as well as less amount of repairs performed in the first quarter over the previous one. These factors culminated in a 40% reduction in EBITDA to $358 million in the first quarter of 2012. Net interest expenses grew by 49% quarter-on-quarter to $30 million due to three factors. Firstly, all the net debt as of the end of 2011 grew by $234 million, or 3% as compared to the end of Q3. Gross debt increased by 4% to or $375 million. That was the result of the management decision to draw on available credit facilities and put cash on deposits in order to protect the company's liquid position should the situation in the financial markets, characterized by sharply increased volatility in Q4, worsen further. That resulted in negative carry in Q1, exacerbated by a general rise in interest rates, leading to an increase in net interest expenses. As the situation improved in Q2, coupled with the successful renegotiation of the covenant package and refinancing of short-term debt, the cash cushion created in Q4 was reduced, bringing the gross debt back down. Secondly, the efforts taken by the management in Q1 and Q2 to replace short-term debt with longer-term one naturally led to an increase in the average cost of debt. This rise in interest rates was further augmented by a rather sharp appreciation of ruble during the reporting period, with half of our credit portfolio denominated in Russian currency. These three factors affected all the segments. The income tax expense in the mining segment increased by $28 million, which was due to utilization of the tax loss carried forward and the deferred tax benefit related mostly to change of future corporate tax rates in Bluestone recorded in Q4. Net profit decreased by $198 million from $439 million to $241 million, driven by the factors just discussed, as well as a $64 million quarter-on-quarter increase in FX gain due to ruble appreciation. Now let's turn to the steel segment. I'm happy to say that the efforts taken by the company to optimize its production and sales policy in the fourth quarter, as well as reduce its inventory levels, bore fruit in the reported periods. The third-party sales grew by 7% quarter-on-quarter to $1,649 million despite low season, exacerbated by exceptionally harsh weather conditions in February in Russia and Eastern Europe. In particular, we managed to increase sales of engineering steel by 22%, carbon flat steel by 31% tonnage-wise, both on the domestic and export markets. At the same time, the biggest fall in physical sales volumes was demonstrated by alloyed long steel, down by 17%, all at the expense of the domestic market, where demand was traditionally subdued due to the seasonal factors and smaller number of sales days in the reported period. The same factors stood behind the 11% fall in stainless flat and the 9% reduction in wire sales volume-wise. The similar situation was expectedly observed on the domestic market for rebar, where physical sales volumes went down by 8%. However, as the factors affecting the Russian market for long steel were less pronounced in Europe, our efforts to unload the stock and release working capital led to almost a twofold growth in European rebar sales, which more than compensated the fallout in Russian sales. As input cost outpaced the downward price dynamics of semis, we took advantage of the situation by rapidly increasing sales of billet purchased from third parties, largely from Astar, which grew by 23% quarter-on-quarter in physical terms, adding $46 million to the segment's revenue. The scale of success can be better assessed if we compare the first quarter of 2012 to the same period of 2011, where market conditions were sensibly better. The physical sales volumes of rebar grew by 30%, carbon flat by 14%, engineering steel by 18%. At the same time, sales of semi-finished products like billet and wire rod, despite a quarter-on-quarter increase in Q1 of 2012, fell by 37% to the same period of last year, as more processing capacity was being added at our own facilities and output at finished goods grew. To add the final touch to the achievements of the first quarter 2012, I need to note that we managed to bring about that increase in sales in spite of the low season for our products, avoiding an impact on pricing. The FCA price on our product remained largely flat quarter-on-quarter, only wire rod and engineering steel notching down by 8 and 4% respectively. To a large extent, that was the achievement of Metal Service Global, which demonstrated its pricing resilience and sales capacity using a sizable distribution network in Russia and Europe. Despite growth in revenue, the cost of sales decreased by 1% as prices for raw materials consolidated. Extra efforts were taken to minimize the cost of raw materials by increasing the share of own sinter, replacing more expensive pellets following to the increase of productivity of the sinter plant at Chelyabinsk, which, together with lower prices for coke and iron ore, led to a fall in billet cash cost to $497 per ton. Cash cost of rebar did not change much as a decrease in price of input materials was offset by increased share of fixed cost as some of the rolling facilities were temporarily idled in order to reduce the stock of products for sale. The combination of higher sales and lower costs doubled the gross income quarter on quarter to $249 million with the same effect on the gross margin that increased to over 14% of the revenue. The selling and distribution expenses grew by 10% to $162 million as sales of semis on CIF and CFR basis to Eastern Asia grew. The share of these expenses in the revenue stayed at about 10% as in the previous period. The administrative expenses grew by 16% quarter on quarter to $63 million due to the absence in Q1 of one-off income from reduction of pension liabilities posted in Q4 2011. The efforts taken by the company to improve the performance of the steel segment resulted in a negative EBITDA of $50 million posted in Q4 of 2011, reversed into earnings of $49 million in the reported period. Net interest expenses grew by 18% quarter-on-quarter to $84 million due to the factors described above, as well as one that relates in particular to the steel segment, In the first quarter, we posted an additional $5 million accrued expense resulting from discounting the long-term payables for the Donetsk plant acquired in the end of Q4, where no such expense was accrued. The income tax expense increased by almost $11 million quarter-on-quarter, largely due to the utilization of tax loss carried forward at Chelyabinsk plant, as well as absence of almost $3 million tax income at Metal Service Russia posted in Q4 due to a sharp decrease in profitability as compared to the first 9 months, resulting in a tax write-back. The segment posted a $91 million FX gain in Q1 due to a sharp depreciation of dollar versus ruble, which can be compared to a $22 million loss in the previous quarter. That all led to a 92% quarter-on-quarter decrease in the segment's net loss to just $16 million, a significant improvement even despite the FX gain. With that factor stripped off, the bottom line still shows a 38% quarterly improvement. The ferroalloy segment demonstrated better revenue dynamics in the first quarter as compared to the previous one. FCE sales price of nickel were up 6% and flat on chrome quarter-on-quarter. At the same time, the relaunch of the refurbished furnace at Brusk in March, as well as lower sales to the steel segment, led to a 9% rise in third-party sales of ferrosilicon. Sales of nickel and chrome grew by 4% and 2% respectively in physical terms, in combination with slightly higher FCA prices, driving segmental revenue from third parties up almost 8% to $125 million. Inter-segment revenue increased dramatically by almost 74% to $28 million, largely as a result of almost doubled quarter-on-quarter sales of nickel, which had fallen sharply in Q4 as more than sufficient stock was created at our steel plants in Q3. That stock was consumed in the following quarter and then replenished in Q1, resulting in a sharp rise in the sales to the steel business. Cash costs were largely under control, changing only insignificantly, with nickel up 4% due to higher gas and electricity consumption, ferrosilicon down the same 4% as output grew after the furnace returned to production, chrome flat, while cash cost of a ton of chrome concentrate down 7% due to growth of output. However, growth of the top line, driven largely by increased sales of nickel, led to a 22% rise in the cost line. That was just enough to decrease the gross loss by 20% over the previous quarter to just $15 million. Operating expenses grew by 10%, mirroring sales growth. Administrative expenses, though, were almost 22% down quarter on quarter, largely due to the absence of write-offs on fixed assets posted in Q4. The combination of better gross results and slightly higher operating expenses still resulted in a reduction of the negative EBITDA of the segment by one-third to just $7.5 million, indicating that the segment is well on the path to recovery. Net interest expenses grew by $6 million, all due to the factors described in the mining segment discussion. The income tax showed a $7 million gain in the reported period versus a $1 million expense in the previous one due to a $9.5 million tax asset carried forward on Voskhod refinery, resulting from a loss recorded in Q1. The ferroalloy segment was the only one showing an FX loss, which amounted to $23 million in the first quarter, at the time when ruble appreciated against other currencies. That largely resulted from the revaluation of ruble-denominated intercompany loans received by the entities whose reporting currency is Kazakh tenge or British pound, such as Voskhod Chrome and the holding company Oriel Resources. The FX loss was the dominating factor behind the net loss of $56 million. If the FX effect is stripped from the analysis, the bottom line was still improved by 9%. Now let's turn to the power segment. The first quarter, just like the fourth one, are traditionally a high season for power sales. No surprise then that the increased electricity and heat consumption led to a 16% quarter-on-quarter growth in the revenue from third parties to $243 million and another 8% growth in revenue from internal consumption to $136 million. The cost of sales grew in line with revenue, which resulted in a flat gross margin of 27%, the gross income rising 14% to $102 million. Selling and distribution expenses grew by 9% to $73 million, reflecting higher sales. Administrative expenses fell dramatically quarter on quarter by almost $18 million. The biggest contributor to that difference was a $7 million loss realized in Q4 due to a reassessment of the financial results of quotas for emission rights sales by Toplofikatsia Rusi in that financial period as the purchase price allocation of the power plant was finalized. Another $5 million were recorded as a provision for environmental claim at Southern Kuzbass power plant in Q4. In Q1, all these items being absent, there was an additional $1.5 million income realized on disposal of fixed assets. The effect of this economics on the segment's EBITDA was a dramatic 9 times increase to $28 million, or 7% of the revenue, versus just 1% in the previous quarter. Net interest expenses grew by $1.5 million. The FX effect was negligible as usual. The income tax rose by $4 million due to overall increase in the segment's profitability. The bottom line reversed from a $6 million loss in the fourth quarter to a $12 million income in Q1. On the consolidated level, the reduction in the top line of the mining segment was compensated by growth in all other segments, resulting in just 1% quarter-on-quarter growth, also in line with the results of the first 3 months of 2011. Gross margin also improved by 1% to 33% of the revenue, which can be compared to almost 35% in Q1 2011. SD&A expenses increased by 19% to $661 million, driven largely by the mining segment as discussed above. It is notable, though, that administrative expenses remained flat if compared to the first quarter of 2011. Downward trend in the mining segment's economics could not be fully countered by improvements in other segments, driving the consolidated EBITDA 14% down quarter-on-quarter to $463 million. The EBITDA margin contracted to 16% of the revenue. The net interest expense grew by 33% to $142 million due to the factors discussed above. Income tax expense grew by 49% quarter-on-quarter to $103 million, largely due to the mining segment. The FX transaction posted a $171 million gain on the consolidated level versus only $14 million in Q4 of 2011, pushing the net income to $218 million in the reported period. As I said in the beginning of our discussion, the first quarter visibly demonstrated the successful results of the measures taken by the company in the fourth quarter of 2011, aimed at adjusting the production to match current demand and optimization of working capital in order to release cash back into the business. Despite uneasy market environment and generally downward price trend in commodity markets, these measures resulted in operating cash flow growing by 28% to $345 million quarter-on-quarter if we take away the effect on the cash flow in Q4 coming from the settlement through a loan to Estar. It is notable that $118 million of the operating cash flow came from release of working capital. In particular, the reduction in inventory resulted in a release of $176 million, where $137 million came from the steel segment and $40 million from mining, partly offset by increased receivables as sales in the steel segment grew. Investments consumed $276 million, almost entirely for the purchase of fixed assets. The balance of $69 million between cash flow from operations and investments went to debt reduction, topped up with repayment of debt from the cash balance, resulting in $305 million of gross debt reduction. On the balance sheet side, however, the net debt has risen by $458 million to $9.7 billion. That rise entirely attributable to ruble appreciation versus dollar and the fact that ruble-denominated loans represented 51% of our gross debt portfolio. The trailing net debt to EBITDA ratio deteriorated to 4.2 times, all due to Q1 EBITDA reduction, but still very comfortably within the renegotiated covenants level of 5.5 times for the year 2012. Net interest expenses was 3.3 times EBITDA covered, which was also well within the new covenants. To recap, ladies and gentlemen, the first quarter proved that despite challenging market conditions, the company has been able to turn around its operations to counter the downward trend in its key commodity markets and significantly improve its cash generation capacity through better production planning and working capital management. The flexibility and adaptability of our vertically integrated business model has demonstrated that even in the current volatile market environment, the company is capable not only to continue with its key investment projects, but to reduce its debt along with it. The steps that the company is going to take in order to optimize its business structure in line with the new strategy announced at the last conference call will help it to further improve its cash-generating capacity, which will be translated into higher profitability and return for our shareholders. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for your attention. The team is ready to take your questions.
Thank you. We will now take questions. We'd ask that participants please state their name and company before asking their question and allow some time after for translation. When questions are answered in Russian, they will be followed by translation. So you may ask your question in Russian also, and we will translate for you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question on this call, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad now. And our first question is coming from the line of Sergei Donskoy, Societe Generale. Please go ahead, Sergei.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for the call. I have two questions at this point. First of all, according to your statement of cash flows, you have repaid during the quarter about $280 million of debts. While looking at balance sheet, I find that gross debts actually increased by approximately $230 million, which results in, like $500 million discrepancy. Could you somehow comment on this? Have you consolidated some external loans during the quarter, or something else happens? Second question is, speaking of the working capital reduction during first quarter, it was a positive achievement, but perhaps not quite enough given the rising level of financial leverage. Do you have any internal target of working capital reduction you want to achieve this year? Should we expect same, higher, lower reduction in the working capital next quarter? And what is the likely amount that you plan to release for the entire year? Thank you.
Два вопроса от Societe Generale. Первый вопрос касается ситуации с долгом. Если взять отчет о движении денежных средств, то там мы видим задолженность на 180 миллионов долларов. Если взять баланс, то там валовый долг указан как вырос на 230 миллионов долларов. Соответственно, возникает разница между этими двумя документами в 500 миллионов. Скажите, пожалуйста, в связи с чем это произошло? Была ли консолидация каких-то внутренних займов в течение этого квартала? Как вы это прокомментируете? Второй вопрос касается оборотного капитала и его снижения в первом квартале этого года. В целом это положительно рассматривается, но является ли это достаточным с учетом того, что все еще наблюдается рост финансового рычага долга? И есть ли у вас какие-то внутренние цели в компании по снижению оборотного капитала в следующем квартале? Можете ли вы нас как-то сориентировать? Спасибо.
Станислав Плющенко will answer the questions.
The reason behind the discrepancy between the balance sheet and cash flow statements is that the items in the balance sheet are translated using the currency exchange rates as of the beginning and the end of the reporting period, whereas in the cash flow statements the average exchange rate is taken throughout the period. Therefore, during the time of high currency exchange rate fluctuation, this discrepancy is very common. Obviously, no additional or no any kind of internal loans or external loans were consolidated. It's purely the effect of rising ruble dollar rate. As far as the second question is concerned, in order to assess the group's efforts to reduce its working capital, we need to take into account the factor that the measures that led to working capital release were being worked out and implemented during the fourth quarter and partly during the first one. So a lot of the effect is yet to come. And another very important factor, which I mentioned a few times in the discussion, is that most of the reduction came from the steel segment, where we have high stocks of finished products. And the first quarter, as well as the fourth quarter, is a low season for steel market, especially for the construction market. Therefore, this factor is very important to take into account evaluating the result from measures taken in order to optimize working capital. We certainly expect that as the construction season began in the second quarter, there will be more capital, working capital release. In the present conditions, we expect that at least $500 million of working capital should be released this year, and obviously that will depend on the market trends and the situation on the financial markets as well.
Thank you.
По первому вопросу, в чем объясняется разница в балансе и отчете денежных, движения денежных средств, в балансе данные суммы указываются с учетом валютных курсов начала и конец отчетного периода, в то время как в отчете движения денежных средств берет среднее значение по обменному курсу за отчетный период. Собственно, это стандартная практика, и этим вызваны расхождения в цифрах. Не было никакой консолидации внутренних или внешних займов, все объясняется изменением обменных курсов рубля и доллара за отчетный период. Что касается второго вопроса, чтобы оценить усилия компании по сокращению оборотного капитала, надо обязательно учитывать те меры, которые мы предпринимали в конце, в четвертом квартале, в первом квартале эти меры были разрабатывались и внедрялись по высвобождению капитала. И мы еще увидим эффект от этих мероприятий в ближайшее время. В частности, есть еще один фактор. Вы знаете, что первый квартал, четвертый квартал, первый квартал является традиционно низким сезоном для строительной отрасли, и мы увидели значительное освобождение денежных средств именно в металлургическом сегменте, где в этот период времени скопился достаточно большой склад готовой продукции. И мы ожидаем, что со второго квартала, когда произойдет оживление на строительном рынке, мы увидим большее высвобождение оборотного капитала. В целом, в течение этого года мы ожидаем, что до 1,5 миллиарда долларов будет высвобождено, но многое зависит от конъюнктуры на рынке, в частности, от ситуации на финансовых рынках. Спасибо.
We're ready for the next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is coming from the line of Anton Lumianza from Troika. Please go ahead, Anton.
Good evening, gentlemen. Thank you for a very detailed presentation. I've got several questions. The first one is a follow-up question on Sergei's question on debt. So, in the presentation you are showing that your current debt is below 9 billion, and I just wanted to ask what was the reasons of this decrease. Was it solely the ruble depreciation, or you have been you have continued to repay your debt? And the second question is what sales dynamics can we expect in mining division for the second quarter? So do you plan to increase the sales of coking concentrate, PCI and sort seeds? And actually, what price dynamics do you currently see for these products? Thank you.
Два вопроса от тройки. Первое продолжение предыдущего, касающегося задолженности. В презентации говорили о том, что текущий уровень долга сегодня ниже 9 миллиардов. Чем вызвано это снижение? Обесценением рубля, либо вы выплачивали, погашали задолженность. Второй вопрос по поводу динамики продаж в добывающем дивизионе. Во втором квартале каковы ожидания, какие ваши планы по росту продаж угля и PCI и концентрат коксующегося угля? Какую динамику цен вы ожидаете во втором квартале?
The first question will be answered by Stanislav Plochenko.
Yes, indeed. Most of the reduction of net debt in the second quarter came as a result of the reverse dynamics of ruble and dollar exchange rate, but we continue to repay some of the debt out of the operating cash flow as well.
В основном снижение чисто задолженности связано с обратной динамикой обменных курсов рубля и доллара, но да, мы продолжаем погашать задолженность из операционно-денежного потока.
The second question will be answered by Oleg Karzhov.
Значит, ну, давайте пройдемся, наверное, по основным нашим потребителям, кратко. Потому что ценовая политика была не везде однозначная. Значит, если говорить про угли марки К9, это угли Якутугля, то во втором квартале цены реализации у нас три основных потребителя. Это Украина, это Китай и Япония и Корея. Значит, если говорить про Украину, то цены реализации на Украину составили примерно порядка $200 на условиях ДДУ, тариф порядка $57. Это были цены реализации второго квартала. Они относительно первого квартала произошло снижение примерно на 30 долларов. Поэтому второй квартал у нас цены были ниже, чем первый квартал. На Китай, значит, цены реализации. Здесь мы продаем уголь несколько других качественных характеристик. В первом квартале цены реализации были на уровне $185-190 на условиях СИФ Китая. В первом квартале, в принципе, эта динамика сохранилась, и цены были примерно на том же самом уровне. Тариф до Китая составляет порядка $55-57 США. Ну и третий рынок большой, куда мы реализуем нашу продукцию и Якутугля, это Япония и Корея. В первом квартале цены находились на уровне $215-220 США на условиях ФОП-ПАСЕП. Во втором квартале также произошло снижение цен реализации, и они составили порядка $185-190 США на условиях ФОП. Тариф до порта ПАСЕП порядка $41-42 США. Значит, следующий сегмент, который мы также продаем в значительном количестве на экспорт, это угли марок PCI и антрацитов. Значит, PCI мы продаем в основном в два направления, это Япония, Корея и Китай. На Японию цены реализации второго квартала были на уровне, здесь у нас, в принципе, динамика, она, цены примерно находились на одном и том же уровне и в первом, и во втором квартале, цены составляли порядка на Японию, Корею $140-150 на условиях ФОП. На условиях ФОП, и на Китай мы продавали на условиях СИФ, здесь цены были порядка 160-165 в первом квартале и 150-160 во втором квартале. Ну и кроме того, мы еще продаем антрациты. Антрациты мы в основном продаем на Европу через порт Венстелс. Цены реализации в первом и во втором квартале были тоже на уровне $145-150 США. Тариф до Венсполса порядка $60 США. Значит, если говорить про наши ожидания по третьему кварталу, то, в принципе, учитывая, что ценовая политика компании, она соответствует тем трендам, которые есть на мировых рынках, на сегодняшний день уже ведется активная контрактация ведущих производителей коксующих концентратов. В частности, компания Anglo American уже согласовала цену с компанией POST на третий квартал квартальную. Учитывая конъюнктуру рынка, которая складывается на сегодняшний день, значит, мы предполагаем, что цены реализации на коксующий концентрат в третьем квартале вырастут порядка $10-15 США.
The pricing policy very much depends on the consumer, so we need to take consumers and respective products separately. Let's start with K9 grade coals, which come primarily from Yakut Ugol. In the second quarter, the sale price dynamics depended on the destination for those products. Those coals are shipped to Ukraine, China, and Japan and Korea. For Ukraine, the sale price in the second quarter was $200 on the basis of DDU. The DDU rate was $57. In the first quarter,
the prices were about 30% higher. So in the second quarter, the price was lower. As to China, we are shipping a slightly different grade of coal to China, and in the first quarter, the prices were $185-$190 on the basis of CIF. In the second quarter, the price was more or less the same, and the shipment rate to China is $55-$57. Japan and Korea, in the first quarter, the prices were $215-$220 on the basis of FOB delivery to Port Poissiat. In the second quarter, the prices went down somewhat to $185-$190 on the basis of FOB, and the same FOB to Poissiat is $41-$42. Now, if we take PCI coals and anthracite, PCI goes to Japan and Korea and to China. In the second quarter, prices were more or less the same as in the first quarter and amounted to $140-$150 on the basis of FOB. To China, the shipments are made on the CIF basis. In the first quarter, the price was $165, and in the second quarter, $150-$160. Anthracite is shipped to Europe through Port Ventspils. The delivery rate is $60, while the sale price is $145-$150. As to our expectations of the third quarter, the company's pricing policy goes much in the same direction as the global trends. We are currently actively contracting. We know that, for instance, Anglo American has already agreed their prices with POSCO, and as the coking coal concentrate, we expect that in the third quarter the prices will add another $10 to $15. Thank you.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is coming from the line of Andrei Lobazov from Alpha Bank. Please go ahead, Andrei.
Yes, hello. First of all, thank you for the presentation. One of my questions about average realized prices has been answered already, so I have only one question left about production costs. Given significant ruble devaluation, how do you see your mining cash costs in the second quarter, specifically at 1000 Kuzbass and Yakutia Uguel, as compared to the first quarter of this year? Thank you.
Вопрос от Альфа-банка касается себестоимости производства в связи с обесценением рубля. Какими вы видите в следующем квартале затраты на добычу в добывающем дивизионе, в частности, на Южном Кузбассе и в Якутске?
Олег Крылов will answer the question.
Мы ожидаем, что во втором квартале наша себестоимость, наши КШКСТ будут ниже, чем в первом квартале. И наши предпосылки, они основываются на трех основных допущениях. Первое, значит, во-первых, сезонный фактор. Во втором квартале, как правило, цены, затраты у нас меньше, потому что наши активы угольнодобывающие находятся в северных районах. И, как правило, во втором квартале за счет этого у нас идет снижение себестоимости. Второй фактор – это то, что мы во втором квартале увеличим примерно на 10% объема добычи. В частности, на Южном Кузбассе у нас после аварии в мае месяце выходит шахта Сибиргинская, вышла в работу. Соответственно, с увеличением объемов производства и запуском Сибиргинской шахты мы планируем, что наши запасы, наши кэш-косты уменьшатся. Ну и немаловажный фактор в затратах – это фонд заработной платы. Дело в том, что у нас существует регрессированная шкала начисления, что также поспособствует тому, что себестоимость будет снижаться в связи с тем, что от месяца к месяцу будет за счет регрессии этой будет налоговое начисление будет снижаться. Поэтому мы планируем, что в следующем квартале, во втором, в этом квартале наша себестоимость будет ниже, чем в первом квартале.
Thank you.
We expect that in the second quarter the cash costs for the company will be lower than in the first quarter, and our reasoning goes in the following way. There are three main factors. Basically, factor number one is the seasonal factor. You know that mainly our production is located in the northern regions, and traditionally our costs in the second quarter have always been lower than in the first quarter. The second factor is that we plan to add another 10% to our production in the second quarter. You know that in the South Kuzbass there was an accident in May, and now
It may be relaunched tonight.
And now Sibirkinskaya mine is relaunched, and we expect that it will contribute, of course, to mining production. And the third factor is related to the salaries and the taxes imposed on the salaries, the way the taxes are calculated and paid. Our company is subject to a regressive accrual scale for the taxes, and that's why we expect once again our cash costs in the second quarter to be lower than that in the first quarter.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Next question is coming from the line of Oleg Petropavlovsky from BCS. Please go ahead, Oleg.
Good evening, gentlemen. Thank you for your presentation. A couple of questions for me. When are you going to finish the audit and announce your divestment plans? And the second question is, what are your expectations on the 2Q and 3Q steel prices environment?
Два вопроса. Первый касается текущего анализа всех активов компании, когда вы сможете объявить о своих планах по отчуждению каких-то активов в продаже, есть уже какая-то информация. Второй вопрос касается ваших ожиданий по ценам на металлургическую продукцию во втором и в третьем квартале.
The first question will be answered by Евгений Михель.
Действительно, как я уже говорил, мы проводим серьезную работу по анализу наших активов и планируем завершить эту работу ориентировочно к началу четвертого квартала. У нас уже на сегодняшний день есть ряд, есть определенное мнение по ряду активов, которые мы считаем необходимо реализовать, но объявлять пофамильно мы сейчас не готовы, поскольку в любом случае этот вопрос будет вынесен на рассмотрение совета директоров, после чего, наверное, уже можно будет говорить о каких-то итоговых результатах этой работы. Спасибо.
Yes, as we have already explained, currently we are undertaking a review of all our assets, and we plan to complete this process in the beginning of the first quarter. We already have an understanding regarding certain assets that can be subject to divestment, but it is too early to give any specific information and to name names, so to say. We will present our findings to the board of directors, and the board of directors will take the final decision.
The second question will be answered by Oleg Koryzhov.
Учитывая, что основным ассортиментом, который производим и производит и реализует наша компания, является строительный ассортимент, необходимо отметить, что он имеет определенный сезонный фактор. Если брать цены реализации второго квартала по отношению к первому, то в принципе динамика она была практически не менялась. Цены второго квартала среднеизвешенно они примерно находились на одном и том же уровне. При этом к концу второго квартала цены на строительный ассортимент в связи с сезонностью, как я уже сказал, стали несколько повышаться. Учитывая, что исторически третий квартал является пиковым для строительного ассортимента, значит, мы ожидаем, что в третьем квартале цены на строительный ассортимент вырастут порядка 5-7%. В принципе, это исторически подтверждено уже долгими периодами, поэтому именно такого роста мы ожидаем и в третьем квартале. Ситуация на внешних рынках, она, к сожалению, менее оптимистичная. Квадратная заготовка, которая также занимается реализацией нашей компании, на текущий момент находится на достаточно низком уровне. При этом...
Добрый день.
Sorry. При этом во втором квартале, опять же, были определенные положительная динамика на квадратную заготовку в течение квартала, но на сегодняшний день, как я уже сказал, цены достаточно низкие. Поэтому мы считаем, что цена эта находится на дне, и в ближайшее время, в какой-то краткосрочной перспективе, цены должны поправиться, и выйти на более-менее приемлемый уровень, на уровне там, $570-580 на условиях ФОП.
You know that construction products are core products for our company, and construction industry is extremely seasonal. In the second quarter, the dynamics, price dynamics was more or less flat. The prices stayed at the, more or less the same level as they were in the first quarter. However, towards the end of the second quarter, the prices started growing, and historically, the third quarter has always seen some peak prices on the construction products. And again, if we rely on the historical dynamics, then the prices, we expect the prices to grow by 5-7% in the third quarter. The situation in the external markets is less optimistic, especially the prices on square billet are at an extremely low level at the moment. And in the second quarter, there was some improvement on those prices on square billet, but I think that right now these prices have hit bottom. And we expect that in the short term, the prices will recover and reach the level of $570-580 FOB.
Next question, please.
Thank you. The next question is coming from the line of Bernard Zonneveld from ING Bank. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. First of all, we're living in very difficult times, and if you then see the first quarter results of Mitchell, I think they are very reasonable, good results. And therefore, I think a big compliment to the senior management team of Mitchell that they did an excellent work in these difficult times. Having said that, I have two questions. My questions are the following with regard to, and I'm a typical banker, so forward-looking. I don't want to look so much backwards. So we see that last year you had an average adjusted EBITDA margin of 19 and 18, 21 and 18% per quarter. We are now at 16% the first quarter. Based on your figures of the second quarter, or let's say your estimate of the second quarter, can you tell us a little bit about your outlook for, let's say, the EBITDA margin for the full year 2012? So will it in the end be higher than the 16% as presented now? And the second question had to do with, let's say, your total debt position, apparently now net around 9.2 billion. If I see in your presentation of June on page 14, I see that it's mentioning the total debt reduced in quarter two to date to under 9 billion. Can you please clarify that as well? Thank you very much.
Два вопроса от ING. Мы сейчас живем в трудные времена, и в первом квартале, однако, ваша компания показала очень достойные, хорошие результаты. Я хочу поздравить руководство компании с этим достижением. Проделали замечательную работу. В этой связи у меня два вопроса. Как банкир я всегда смотрю вперед, я не хочу смотреть назад. Поэтому первый вопрос касается среднескорректированной EBITDA. За прошлые периоды, например, в прошлом квартале вы показывали 18%, она была на достаточно высоком уровне. В среднем, а за первый квартал вы указали уровень EBITDA на 16%. Наверняка у вас уже есть прикидки по второму кварталу, и в принципе до конца года какие у вас ожидания по EBITDA, вернется ли этот уровень, поднимется ли он снова выше 16%. И второй вопрос касается общей задолженности. Мы в документах считаем, что чистый долг сегодня составляет 9,2 миллиарда. Презентация июньская на 14 странице написано, что он снизился сегодня меньше 9 миллиардов. Могли бы вы это прокомментировать?
Станислав Площенко will answer.
Thanks, Bernard, for the questions. With regard to the first one, unfortunately, it is the company's policy not to give forward-looking statements with regard to its financial metrics, but the company has a view on the development of its EBITDA, and with that view, which hasn't changed so far, we approached the syndicate of banks to renegotiate the debt covenants a few months ago, as you know, and we are pretty certain that the room that we have agreed with the banks for the fluctuation in the net debt to EBITDA metrics is still very comfortable for the company through the end of this year. The second question, most of the reduction most of the difference between the debt as of the end of the first quarter and of last Friday, which is the date as of which we put this number into the presentation, has happened due to a rather sharp dollar appreciation versus ruble in the second quarter. But on top of that, we are continuing to use excessive operating cash flow to repay debt.
Thank you. Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is coming from the line of Sam Yakov. Please go ahead with your translation, please. Thank you.
Спасибо. Что касается первого вопроса, то, как вы знаете, компания не комментирует свои финансовые перспективы, не делает никаких заявлений относительно будущего, но, конечно, у компании есть точка зрения по поводу перспективного уровня EBITDA. Эта точка зрения не меняется. Вы знаете, что несколько месяцев назад мы вместе с банками пересмотрели наши долговые ковенанты, и то пространство для маневров, которые мы с ними согласовали, является достаточным, чтобы компания чувствовала себя уверенно абсолютно до конца года. По второму вопросу в отношении разницы в величине долга, как она указана за первый квартал, и то, что вы видите в презентации. Презентация составлялась в прошлую пятницу, и эта информация, соответственно, тоже на прошлую пятницу. Разница связана с укреплением доллара по отношению к рублю, которое происходило в течение всего второго квартала. В любом случае мы используем свободные денежные средства для погашения нашей задолженности.
Now we're ready for the next question.
And our next question is coming from the line of Dan Yakov from Citi. Please go ahead, Dan.
Guys, thanks a lot for the presentation. A couple of questions. The first question relates to the Elga coal deposit production guidance. There was a published production guidance which suggested that you will be achieving 2 million tons of run-of-the-mine coal already in 2012, and 1.3 million tons of clean washed or concentrated coal in 2012. And that was growing to 6 million tons by 2014, which is equivalent to 4.5 million tons of washed coal in 2014. Can you provide an understanding of whether this guidance is still in place, and what will be the washed or concentrated split between thermal and metallurgical coals in the first couple of years of production. Second question relates to the ruble-denominated exchange-traded bonds. I understand that the pretty significant proportion of the 9 billion US dollar equivalent of the net debt is actually in ruble bonds. 25% of the total debt profile is in ruble bonds. Can you elaborate a little bit on the covenants that pertain to these ruble bonds, and maybe you can disclose who is the main holders, who are the main holders of these bonds? Would these be Russian financial institutions? Is there one financial institution? Is there many financial institutions who would actually hold these ruble bonds? And finally, there's to finish off the debt questions, I just want to understand what kind of collateral Sberbank, who is among the major lenders to you, what kind of collateral Sberbank is holding against the debt that is extended to you. These are the debt and Elga questions, and I might have one more market, steel market related question, if I may, once we have dealt with these questions. Thank you.
Три вопроса от Сити. Сити в настоящий момент. Первое касается Регенского месторождения. Вы публиковали планы по добыче на 2012 год. Вы говорили о 2 миллионах рядового угля и 1,3 миллиона тонн концентрата или обогащенного в 2012 году. Вы говорили, что к 2014 году добыча выйдет на уровень 6 миллионов, 4,5 миллиона, соответственно, тонн обогащенного угля. Сохраняются эти планы в силе? И можете ли вы дать нам разбивку по металлургическим и энергетическим углям, в какой пропорции вы собираетесь их добывать в первую пару лет добычи. И второй вопрос касается бондов, облигаций в рублях. Значительная часть, насколько я понимаю, из 9 миллиардов долга приходится на рублевые облигации, это где-то 25%. Какие существуют ковенанты по этим рублевым облигациям? И если вы можете раскрыть эту информацию, то кто основные держатели этих облигаций? Это российские финансовые учреждения, одно или много таких учреждений? Третий вопрос тоже по долгу. Скажите, пожалуйста, какое обеспечение держит Сбербанк, какое обеспечение вы использовали в отношениях со Сбербанком? И, может быть, будет еще один вопрос по металлургическому рынку позднее, после того, как вы ответите на эти первые три.
Олег Крыжов will answer the first question.
Мы уже говорили о том, что на 2012 год мы наши планы по добыче на Ильге мы скорректировали. Основным ограничивающим фактором по добыче у нас являлся ввод обогатительных мощностей. Теоретически добыть мы можем и 2 миллиона. На сегодняшний день у нас подготовлены объемы для добычи, но учитывая сроки реализации проекта и ввода в эксплуатацию сезона обогатительной фабрики, мы эти планы скорректировали. И, соответственно, на 2012 год мы для себя поставили ориентировочную планку, это объемы добычи до 1 миллиона тонн. Проект по вводу в эксплуатацию сезона обогатительной фабрики сегодня находится на финишной стадии. В июле месяце мы планируем закончить ее ввод в эксплуатацию. И, как мы и говорили раньше, мы добывать будем ровно столько, сколько сможем обогатить. А здесь у нас оказывает влияние несколько факторов. Ну, во-первых, это окончание ввода в эксплуатацию. Вторая – это пусконаладочные работы и выход фабрику на нормальную производственную мощность. Третье. Сегодня мы рассматриваем варианты утепления фабрики, так как она сезонная и в зимний период не работает, но сегодня мы реализуем программу по возможному продлению службы обогатительной фабрики. И четвертое, это, собственно, от нас не зависящее, это когда наступит зима. Поэтому совокупность этих всех факторов, она предполагает, что мы дает нам ограничения по возможному объему обогащения. А, соответственно, как я уже сказал, добывать будем столько, сколько сможем обогатить. Поэтому пока мы для себя оставили планку до миллиона тонн, а там ведем в июле фабрику в эксплуатацию, и будет видно. Значит, по последующим периодам мы там принципиально планы не меняли. В следующем году мы планируем добыть 2-3 миллиона тонн, опять же, в зависимости от ввода в эксплуатацию следующих обогатительных мощностей, которые у нас идут по плану. Ну и дальше, в принципе, те планы, которые мы намечали, мы их уже не корректировали, они остаются в том виде, который есть. Значит, в ближайшие два года мы планируем, что соотношение коксующихся углей энергетической будет в пропорции коксующихся углей будет порядка 30-35%. С последующим постепенным их увеличением их доли в общем объеме добычи. И с выходом комплекса на объемы добычи 9 миллионов тонн, мы планируем, что соотношение добычи коксующегося угля энергетического будет 50-50.
As you know, in 2010, we had to adjust our plans for ELKA. There is a certain constraining factor that exists there, which is our washing capacities. We
indeed, we planned to produce 2 million tons in 2012, but because of the commissioning of the seasonal washing factory, we had to adjust our plans of production to 1 million tons. This project of the seasonal washing factory is almost finished. We plan to commission this facility in July, but we have always insisted that we need to produce only as much as we can wash. So there are several factors at play here. First of all, our production very much depends, again, on the launch of this seasonal washing factory. Then we will need to build up the capacity, bring it to the design capacity. Then we are currently considering different options of turning that washing factory, or rather to extend the time during which this washing factory can operate in the year. And there is another factor which doesn't really depend on us, which is winter. You never can tell when winter will come this year. So, again, we plan only to produce as much as we can wash. And as to our plans for subsequent years, in the next year, we plan to produce 2 million, 3 million tons of coal. Again, it will depend, the final figure will depend on the launch of additional washing facilities according to our plans. And we have not made any adjustments yet to our plans beyond 2013. Now, to the split between the coking coals and the thermal steam coals, we in the current year, in the next year, we plan to produce 30-35% of coking coal with a subsequent increase of its share in overall production. So when our Elgar deposit production site reaches its design production of 9 million tons, we believe that the split between the coking coals and thermal coals will be 50-50.
Я и уточню, чтобы просто правильно поняли, то возможно двускусное толкование. Когда мы выйдем на объем добычи 9 миллионов тонн, у нас готовая продукция будет 50 на 50. Не в объемах добычи рядового угля, а уже в готовой продукции.
And when I said that there will be a split of 50-50, I meant the finished products, ready products, not the run-of-mine coal, but the ready-made products.
The remaining questions will be answered by Stanislav Plushin.
The first question was about the ruble-denominated bonds, which constitute 25% of our debt portfolio, and the attractiveness of this instrument is exactly the fact that it's covenant-free completely and unsecured, and which is why we envisage further utilization of this instrument in the future should the public debt capital markets in Russia allow. The this 25% consists of a number of tranches, number of issues of different nominal value issued in the course of the last 3 years. So it's a widely distributed instrument across the investment community in Russia, of course including banks, but I would not say that a huge number of this instrument is concentrated by one particular investor. As far as the second question is concerned, in particular for the collateral under Sberbank loans, the usual collateral that with Sberbank we have unsecured loans, largely working capital facilities. As far as long-term facilities are concerned, we have a five-year loan which is already halfway through its maturity. Chelyabinsk plant secured with a 25% plus one share in Belaretsk metallurgical plant. No other significant security is attributed to our Sberbank relationship.
Next question, please.
Just one follow-up question. It's a very quick one on the difference. Well, there is quite a significant premium opened up between rebar and billets. So the premium of realized price of rebar relative to billets in the first quarter of this year was 27% versus approximately 17% in the preceding two quarters, third quarter of 2011, fourth quarter of 2011. Can you comment on why the premium was so large? In such a large increase in the premium in the first quarter, is that the result of much lower billet prices, or a result of particularly strong rebar markets? Thank you.
Металлургической продукции, и он касается премии к цене за арматуру по сравнению с заготовками. Например, в первом квартале премия к цене составила 27% по сравнению с 17% в третьем и четвертом квартале 2011 года. С чем это связано? Может быть, неожиданно стали заготовки намного дешевле, или рынок арматуры почему-то очень сильно оживился. Как вы объясните эту разницу? Спасибо.
Allow us some time for preparing the answer. Площенко will answer the question.
As a matter of fact, there's always a difference between the price on rebar and the billets, because there's two different products and two different markets. The fluctuation or the change in the difference that happens from time to time, when one looks at that, one should take into account that we operate in different markets. So we use billet sales as a commodity, which is highly sensitive to the commodity market changes, whereas the rebar as a finished product market is driven by slightly different factors. And we also should take into account that most of our rebar sales are domestic, where we fully utilize the selling capacity of Mitchell Service. And one of the illustrations was that in the fourth quarter and the first quarter, while the billet prices were volatile, the rebar prices, as a matter of fact, did not change at all.
Когда мы сравниваем разные продукты, нужно понимать, что они действительно разные продукты и действуют на разных рынках. Во времени всегда бывает такая разница в цене. В любом случае, заготовка – это некий товар, это сырьевой практически товар, в то время как арматура – это готовая продукция, это совершенно другой рынок, и там на цены влияют другие факторы. Арматура в основном идет на внутренний рынок, и здесь мы полностью используем все возможности Mitchell Service по продаже данного вида продукции. В первом квартале цены на заготовки были достаточно волатильными, в то время как цены на арматуру практически не менялись.
Next question, please.
Thank you. We currently have no further questions coming through, so just a reminder. please press star 1 if you would like to ask a question. And we have a question coming from the line of Vasily Kuligin from Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead.
Good evening. Thank you for your presentation. Two short questions from me. The first one is regarding Astar Group. What is the timing of consolidation of Astar Group on your balance? For example, if we assume that they really default on their loan closer to September, what will be the first quarter of your consolidated results, including Astar Group financials? And second question is regarding SG&A. It's more general question. Usually your SG&A expenses account for about 20-22% of revenue, which is far above the average level of global peers, which is 4-5%, not more. Does this happens due to natural service separations, or there is some other reason for this? Thanks.
От Ренессанс Капитал два вопроса. Первый из них касается Эстар. С вашей точки зрения, каковы сроки консолидации Эстар на балансе Мечел, если предположить, что они действительно допустят дефолт по своему долгу в сентябре? И второй вопрос касается SG&A, общих административных расходов. У компании они составляют 22% в среднем от выручки, что значительно выше, чем у других представителей отрасли. У них это 4-5%. Связано ли это каким-то образом с Mutual Service или какими-то другими факторами вы можете объяснить эту ситуацию? Спасибо.
Станислав Плотченко will answer.
Well, first of all, it is too early to assume that Astar will default on the debt, and the group does not have an intention to consolidate Astar. This is the eventuality of the final default, and we count on Astar's management or owner's ability to repay debt. As far as the SG&A expenses are concerned, it is difficult for me to compare to the global peers, as you mentioned. I would doubt that the average share of SG&A expenses in the revenue is 4-5%. It looks more like only administrative expenses, and certainly not in our industry, in our country. As you know, the group is selling, well, first of all, there is a big transportation lag from our operations to our core markets, and the group sells a lot of its goods on, not on the FCA basis, but on the final delivery basis, sometimes FOB, sometimes CIF and CFR, and those full delivery basis sales represent the bulk of sales of Mitchell Mining, which in that sense represent the bulk of the consolidated group sales. So no surprise that commercial expenses take a significant part in our revenue. And the same goes for Mitchell Service. Yes, here your assumption is also right.
По первому вопросу еще слишком рано сделать какие-либо предположения относительно дефолта Эстар. У нас нет намерения консолидировать Эстар без наступления соответствующего события. Все зависит от того, произойдет это событие или нет. В любом случае мы рассчитываем на то, что менеджмент, что владельцы Эстар смогут полностью погасить свой долг. По вашему второму вопросу, сложно сравнивать, на самом деле, Мечел с другими представителями отрасли международной масштабе, в том смысле, что я позволю себе усомниться, что действительно средние SG&A составляют 4-5% от выручки. Может быть, речь идет только об административных расходах, но в любом случае это не тот уровень, на котором эти расходы могут быть в нашей стране и в нашей отрасли. Здесь несколько факторов. Вы должны понимать, что есть очень большая транспортная составляющая в деятельности Мечел от мест производства, от мест добычи до наших ключевых рынков. Очень большие расстояния,
поставки осуществляются в основном не на базе FCA, а на базисах окончательной поставки, это FOB, CFA или CFR, и на это приходится действительно достаточно большой кусок консолидированных продаж всей группы. И в том, что касается коммерческих расходов, вот здесь вы правы, что Mitchell Service действительно это большая часть данных расходов.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is coming from the line of Andrei Kulakov, Velocity Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for your presentation. I have a small follow-up question regarding your debt. So as I can find from your presentation, there is a graph showing your loans repayment schedule. And according to that, in 2012, you have about $153 million of commercial papers and rubber bonds that should be redeemed. Well, but it looks strange to me. Maybe I missed something, but as I can find information in public resources, you have three rubber bond issues. One of them should be redeemed. It's 5 billion rubles, but as far as I know, 1.5 billion rubles outstanding. And two bond issues of 10 billion rubles totally that have put options. And you say that you include put options in this schedule. So as a whole, it should be approximately $470 million. Where are the rest? Maybe you bought back something from the market, from the open market, or can you just comment on that? Thanks.
В вашей презентации я вижу график погашения задолженности. На 2012 год у вас указано погашение $153 миллиона. Речь идет о рублевых облигациях и прочих ценных бумагах. Это достаточно для меня выглядит странно, потому что если брать информацию, имеющуюся в публичных источниках, в открытых источниках, то Mitchell делал три эмиссии рублевых бумаг, облигаций. Есть одна эмиссия на 5 миллиардов рублей к погашению, и полтора миллиарда еще остаются в обращении, не погашены. Еще есть два рублевых выпуска облигаций на 10 миллиардов с опционами PUT. И, в общем, если посчитать, получается 470 миллионов, а не 153. Не могли бы это прокомментировать?
Станислав Площенко, ВНС.
We will double check that information, and if there is an error, it will be posted on the website.
Мы перепроверим эту информацию, и если обнаружится ошибка, то мы опубликуем скорректированные данные на сайте.
Okay, thanks.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Next question is coming from the line of George Pujanista from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. Thank you for the presentation. I have a question on your debt. Can you please tell us how is the debt calculated, the net debt is calculated for the purpose of covenant testing? And could you also remind what are the new covenants?
Вопрос от Deutsche Bank. Каким образом считается чистая задолженность для цели проверки по ковенантам? И не могли бы напомнить основную суть ковенанта?
Станислав Площенко, answer.
The net debt is calculated by adding debt, by adding financial lease to debt and subtracting cash and cash equivalents, including deposits, up to 6 months. The net debt to EBITDA level set for this year is 5.5 times, and EBITDA interest expense is 2.6 times.
Чистый долг считается следующим образом. К долгу прибавляется финансовый лизинг и вычитаются деньги, средства денежные эквиваленты, включая депозиты до 6 месяцев. Соотношение чистого долга к EBITDA по ковенанте составляет 5,5. И что касается процентных платежей, процентных расходов к EBITDA, то это 2,6 в этом году.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is coming from the line of Paul Carr from Moore Risk Management. Please go ahead, Paul.
Thank you for taking my call. I don't know if you can actually comment on this, because I know your spokesperson said that you might not be able to comment until the time period expires, but what progress are you making in addressing the ministry's concern at the Yakutia Gold subsidiary?
Вопрос касается подразделения Якутугля и претензий со стороны министерства. Есть ли там какие-то подвижки? Я знаю, что ваш представитель говорил, что вы не можете пока комментировать это в полном объеме, но если можете что-то сообщить, то было бы прекрасно.
Евгений Михель will answer the question.
По результатам прошедших проверок и рассмотрения на комиссии Роснедр в начале мая этого года нам был выписан ряд замечаний к устранению. Мы сейчас над ними работаем. У нас есть процессуальные сроки, которые были предоставлены нам. Это 6 месяцев. И, соответственно, к моменту истечения этого срока мы уже сможем что-то конкретно вам доложить. Сейчас все идет по плану, и мы, в общем, укладываемся и в сроки, и в мероприятия, которые нам предписаны.
As you probably already know, in the beginning of May 2012, there was a meeting of the Special Commission within the Ministry, which considered our case and gave us certain instructions. We are complying with those instructions. They gave us 6 months to fix all the problems that they found at the site. And we believe that currently we are on schedule, we have a plan of action and we are pursuing it, and when this time frame comes to the end, we will be able to give you all the details about that process. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
Thank you. We have a follow-up question from the line of Dan Jakob from Citi. Please go ahead, Dan.
Thanks very much for taking the follow-up question. It really relates to the 15% increase in the interest expenses quarter-on-quarter in the first quarter. What is your feeling for the U.S. dollar interest expense dynamics in the third quarter? I know it would constitute probably financial guidance, but maybe you have an understanding of whether interest expenses are going to remain the same or may change in the subsequent quarters. Thank you.
Еще один вопрос от Сити. Мы видели, что в первом квартале по сравнению с предыдущим кварталом процентные платежи увеличились на 15%. Вот как вы думаете, какую будет динамика по процентным платежам, что касается долларовых платежей в третьем квартале? Я понимаю, что это те самые forward-looking statements и guidance, которые вы не можете давать, но тем не менее, какие ваши ощущения, можете ли вы ими поделиться, останутся ли они на том же уровне или как-то изменятся? Спасибо.
Станислав Площенко will answer.
At the moment, we do not see any significant volatility in dollar interest rates in the markets. But, of course, it's always easier to test the water when you step into it. And since it's the company's strategy for this year to continue debt optimization with the aim to extend the maturity, which may probably entail certain refinancing, including in foreign currency, that may lead, if the market continues to be tied, to an increase in the interest rate. But obviously, we will not sacrifice the economics just to get a longer tenor. We will look at the all the factors at the same time. And I would also like to return to the question which was asked before about the ruble bonds. The figures that are in this in the schedule on the page number 14 represent the maturity of the bonds, but not the put options. The put options are assumed to be to roll over in today's market, since we see the capacity of the market to do that. In case there is a shortage in the market for rolling over the bonds or even for any refinancing, we still feel very comfortable with the cash position of the company and the available credit lines, especially after the reduction of short-term debt or repayment of short-term working capital facilities, which took place in the last 2 months following raising long-term debt with Russian banks, amount to approximately $2 billion.
Что касается вашего вопроса, мы сейчас не видим существенной волатильности на рынке долларов в процентных ставок. Стратегия компании в любом случае сводится к оптимизации задолженности, даже если это потребует, например, рефинансирования, в том числе и в иностранной валюте. Но при этом, если рынок заемных средств будет достаточно узким, ограниченным, а ставки, соответственно, очень высокими, то мы не будем приносить в жертву экономику нашей деятельности только для того, чтобы продлить сроки погашения наших долгов. И возвращаясь к предыдущему вопросу по поводу рублевых облигаций и цифры на 14-й странице там, в таблице, там речь идет о сроке погашения, а не об опционах PUT. И всегда есть возможность rollover. И если будет... Сейчас есть возможность для rollover, но если будет какой-то ограниченный, возможно, какой-то некий дефицит на этот механизм или будет ограниченная возможность для рефинансирования, то сегодняшняя денежная позиция компании и кредитные линии, которые у нее есть, позволяют нам оптимистично смотреть в будущее. В любом случае, в последние пару месяцев мы занимались погашением краткосрочных долгов. Сегодня у компании долгосрочный кредит от российских банков на сумму 2 миллиарда. Спасибо. Свободные деньги в размере 2 миллиардов. Кредитные линии плюс свободные деньги 2 миллиарда.
Next question, please.
Thank you. We currently have no further questions coming through, so just another reminder. Please press star 1 if you would like to ask a question on this call. We've got no further questions coming through. I'll hand it back to your host to wrap up today's call.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for taking the time to join Mitchell's first quarter 2012 financial results conference call today. The replay of the call will be available.